Hello and welcome in to another episode of Podcast 63, Season 2, Episode 14. This week we only have one game to talk about, a win, which is fun to talk about. But we're also going to discuss a little bit about our next two and our last two non-conference games and how they have pretty big ramifications on the rest of our season. We're also going to talk about some fun things that our women's basketball team is doing and how they're doing it. And you know what? We might even talk about the big game they have coming up this week, too. Why not, you know? And then in addition to that, we'll probably talk a little bit about the Missouri Valley Conference as a whole. We've all played around 10 games now, so I think that's a significant portion of our schedule to kind of lead us into the conference season. But Lou, who is this episode sponsored by this week?
This week, we're sponsored by the amazing four-game winning streak we got going on. Go Blurs now. We kind of went down and got beat down in our little tournament right before Thanksgiving, but we've taken that last win we had there in the tournament and turned it into a four-game winning streak. Granted, one of those games might have been against Division II team, but it counts as a win. And I think I'm excited to see this four-game winning streak push toward the last two non-conference games.
Four-game winning streak counts all the same. Stay tuned, and don't forget, go Blurs.
He jumps, he passes out to Hunter. Hunter shoots, off the rim, Brown gets it, scores. It's over, it's over. We won the ball game. Viola won the ball game. Oh, we won 60-58.
All right, Lou. So in addition to our men's team, we have another really impressive team at Loyola, the women's basketball team. They actually, as we're recording this, played earlier today. They won their ninth straight game.
Woo-hoo!
To move to 9-0, the best start in Loyola women's basketball history. They beat Bowling Green 84-76. In addition to that, they had the largest crowd ever for a Loyola women's basketball game there today.
There we go.
Yeah, they had, it was like a school day, like a field trip day.
Okay. Fans in seats.
They had over 3,000 fans there.
There we go. I think, quite honestly, I bet you that's more than some men's games have had this year.
I think you're probably right.
I think we can, you said they had over 3,000. We'll get back to you listeners about which games.
I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this women's team is really impressive. Moving to 9-0. They are led by, I think, two sophomores. I think Allison Day and Abby O'Connor are both sophomores, if I'm not mistaken. But they scored 20 and 19 points, respectively, for our Ramblers, our Lady Ramblers. But it was an exciting game. I was following along with it. It really went down to the wire, and our ladies prevailed. They're super fun to follow, and they have a huge game coming up on Friday. On Friday, they're also playing at home against number 16 DePaul Blue Devils. That game's at 7 p.m. It should be a fun game. And I think, you know, I don't know if we really expect them to win just because DePaul is a powerhouse, especially in women's
team.
Basketball. Yeah. They're always so dominant. But even to play them competitively for four quarters would be huge for this team. And if they could find a way to win, I would bet that they would start receiving votes. To be 10-0, beat a nationally ranked powerhouse women's basketball team like DePaul, it would be really cool. And I hope that I would love to go to this game. Unfortunately, I can't, and I know you can't as well.
Yeah.
But I really am planning to get to a women's basketball game this season.
Regardless of the outcome Friday, I just know if listeners. Please try to make your way, actually. Just go back on the attendance. Out of all the men's home games, only one home game has surpassed 3,000 attendance.
Which one was it?
And that was the home opener, UC Davis.
Okay. Yeah,
every other game has been under 3,000. St. Joe's just hovering near 3,000.
Okay.
But every other game, roughly nearly 2,500. So I think the women's team is really showing they can play. Not saying the men's can't play, but I think it's time where those double-double like headers, you start seeing the crowd stay for both games. And
yeah.
I think that's the important thing because also you see programs like DePaul, their women have been known for years to be great. Now you see their men's team become great. So it's kind of great to see that. And UConn women are always great. When their men's team is great. Well, UConn men and women, if I'm not mistaken, won the national championship
I think so. Same year.
So how great would that be for the school, but then also for the program itself? Do you see the usefulness of the field house, and you see all the extensions of the program? So I think for people to head out and support the Lady Ramblers as well as their own men's Ramblers, that would be great.
Yeah, and this won't be the last time they'll play a nationally ranked team. Our Missouri State women's basketball team's also nationally ranked. And Drake is always very good. I think they were ranked last year, and if they go on a little streak here, they could be ranked as well. So, after that, after the DePaul game, they actually play Missouri State January 3rd at home. So that would be the next really competitive game. Hats off to that whole program. They're really exciting. I hope the student fan base really starts to understand that and gets behind them. And they're a fun team. They're a young team. They play hard. They got a few really tall girls that can score really well around the basket, and a couple really good shooters too. So they're a fun team to watch. But speaking of teams on winning streaks, our men's basketball team is also, as we mentioned before, on a 4-game winning streak of their own. This past week, they defeated Norfolk State at home. It was a bit of a scare, honestly. I was at the game. Lou, I know you know you're stuck up in the rafters, so you're trying to watch, but you're trying to look out for your own safety as well. It was 24-21 at halftime, and honestly, our defense looked great and our offense looked equally as horrible. There was no one doing anything, really, aside from Cam scored a few baskets. Pipkins actually came in off the bench and scored a few baskets. Keith had some free throws and I think a three-pointer. But other than that, it was, I think, going into halftime, I think four players had scored total. And it was really, I thought it was going to be Coppin State all over again.
Okay.
It was touch and go there for a minute. But then I think the first 10 minutes of the second half, it was still more of the same. It was pretty sloppy basketball. Loyola was creating so many turnovers, and they just couldn't figure out a way to cash them in. And then with like 10 minutes to go was when we started kind of going ahead. And then with 8 minutes to go, we took the lead, and we were up by 4, and we never looked back. So overall, I mean, we did win by 19, which, that's the bright side. There are some good things, but there are some things that really worry me about this game. But first of all, the good things, we won. And we won by 19.
W's a W.
And our defense, I think, created 24 turnovers.
24 total turnovers, yes.
Correct. That's insane. That's so impressive.
And against any team, yeah. I think you're showing the pressure on the ball, so I think that's great.
Yeah, so our defense was great. I mean, we held them to 45 points, which, look, I understand they're not a very good team. They're not in a very good conference, but holding any Division I men's basketball team to 45 points is impressive. I mean, for instance, Southern Illinois played Missouri this week, and Missouri held them to 48 points. And we know Southern Illinois is in a rebuilding phase, but they're still a decent team. So anytime you hold an opponent to that low of a scoring output is really impressive. Some other just kind of macro things that I noticed where it was one of the things that I criticized Porter for a lot is him bringing in guys in and out, in and out, in and out every minute, and no one can kind of get on any sort of rhythm. And I tweeted with like 8 minutes left in the game that the lineup of Cameron Crotwig, Lucas Williamson, Tate Hall, Keith Clemens, and Jalon Pipkins was the best lineup they could have out there, and that there was no reason that should switch, that they should get the bulk of the minutes. And that lineup actually played the last 8 minutes, and that was the lineup that took a 2-point lead to a 19-point lead. So I was really, really happy to see Porter let those guys play, and they really showed out and showed that they can hang and that they can take small leads and make them big. But Lou, what were some of your takeaways? Be it something like I mentioned, like the defense already. Or was it maybe some guys having a poor performance, or was it some surprise performances? What was your biggest takeaway?
I think the biggest one for me is surprise of both negative first half, but a huge positive in the second half, and that just has to be Tate Hall. Like, without a doubt, the man scored 21 of his points, all 21 of his points. in the second half.
Yeah, he did. He did. Yeah.
And that's just the crazy thing about how it just talks about how we got kind of scared again. We were only hit by 3.5. And the man was 0 points, 0 field goals. It was just a tough game to watch from his perspective. But that didn't stop him in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the 21 points from one player alone is crazy, but all in one half, that's crazy again. We had Lucas then go off for the first half against Quincy. So I'm noticing that these guys aren't really backing down from taking control over a half.
Mm-hmm.
I do like then that as a team, though, we didn't back down in the second half. In the second half, we were 61% from field goal, 71% from three.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, we were hovering at 70 from free throws, so we'd like to see that go up a little bit. But you know what? We had under 10 turnovers. We had 9. So that's great. But again, it's just the kind of momentum's kind of swing to really switch off from only up being up by 3 to really gaining that momentum. I think it's huge. Again, I love seeing Cameron Crutwood get his double-doubles.
I was going to say, did you see?
I did see, and I watched it, and it was great. Again, though, he also led the team with assists, 6 assists. So do I think that number should keep going down? Because I think he should see the ball come from other guys as well. And that's not on him. That's just the team getting better at knowing how to move the ball. And that's just an interesting take for me is watching Tate Hall. Again, Tate Hall, first year here.
Yeah.
Tate Hall is a guy who is first year to the team, and he really is learning still, but he drops 21 points in the second half.
He's scored 20 points, I think, in either 3 of the past 5 games or 3 of the past 6 games. He's
I think it would
consistently
definitely say 5,
been,
yeah.
Yeah,
we can
scored,
look into that.
Yeah, he scored 21 the other day, and then he scored 21 against Old Dominion and 22 against Colorado State. So he scored in 3 of the last 5, he scored 20. Actually, his lowest output in the past 5 is against Quincy, which is kind of a throwaway game. So he's really been really good recently.
Yeah, I think, yeah, because when I personally go back to Tate Hall, it's the Furman game with the turnovers.
Right.
It's the Coppin State getting away from us. So it's those games in the beginning. But quite honestly, like we're saying, we're talking about it, these final two games for a non-conference are huge because it's either we go 0-2 and we're finished the non-conference 7-6,
mm-hmm.
which is, yeah, a game above 500, but or we could finish 9-4.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a lot different.
With two wins against very good.
Very good teams. Davidson always up there for top 20. Vanderbilt, a big program name. They're on a turnaround spring, so they could have, if they have a good SEC season, that would look like a great win. But my thing is looking forward. We have to look forward.
Yeah.
And there's no, and this game to me shows that Tate Hall will continue to commit during a game, and I'm hoping to see that, especially during Valley play. So that was something. Cameron Crowley, nothing but exceptional from him. I think it's just tough. The one thing about Cam is he hasn't gotten his player of the week at all yet.
Yeah.
And I do think that's going to be tough for us to see him fight in the Missouri Valley player of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Quite honestly, if we were to pick it right now off our team, Tate Hall's our Missouri Valley player.
See, I would disagree, but
yeah, so that's
yeah, it's, but it's close.
But it's close just because, but the thing is, see, then I also got to watch and say Cameron Crowick is doing everything.
Yeah.
He's doing the rebounding. He's doing the assists. He's doing the scoring. So,
and I think since Keith Clemens has come back, he's had a little bit of the pressure taken off of him as well. And
that's
so
true.
I think he's become a little bit more efficient and less, created less turnovers or committed less turnovers.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, I like that. Yeah, because he's committed less, and I think that's great to talk about. For me, one of my last points is Keith Clemens, again, starting. I think that's an interesting thing to see. 8 points, but nothing too bad. 2 for 5 from field goal. I'd like to see that change. But again, as he's in the lineup, putting up 29 minutes.
Yeah,
that might take away, but Pipkin still had 24 minutes, and he was able to find 14 points. Again, Pipkin's, though, a lot of his points, I believe, were in the first half. Maybe 11 of his 14 were all in the first half.
Hmm.
Little negatives. I got to just see things, because things that we kind of got a leaky bucket, and we got to talk about them. Here, man.
Yeah. Hold on. I want to save that for a little bit later.
You want to save that?
Yeah,
okay.
Just a little bit.
That's fine. Because
I think it's a bigger topic that I
understood.
Think
so we're
going
to save a hot, we got a hot topic coming.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Lucas Williamson. I was early saying he shouldn't shoot threes.
Mm-hmm.
But I still want to go with that. Yeah, the Quincy game showed, oh my God, he shot, 7 for 8 from 3?
Yeah.
And yes, he scored 21 of his 24 points from three, and that's amazing. Do I think we have to kind of take that for a little granted with the Quincy team?
Yeah, grain of salt.
But do I think he needs to be a scorer? Yes. But do I think three-point shooting is the way? No. And I think, though, as we see Keith Clemons into the lineup and as we see Jalen Pipkins come off the bench, and maybe Marquise Kennedy kind of finds his groove back again where he started, maybe Lucas isn't your top two scorer, mm-mm, especially with Tate.
No, he's not.
But we need to see efficient scoring.
Yeah, my biggest problem with Lucas is I think he's the type of scorer that needs to see one go in order for him to get hot or to kind of maintain his efficiency. And so I would love to see him at the beginning of the game, whether it's a play drawn up for him or him trying to find a way to get to the hoop, whether that's finishing and making a layup or getting to the free throw line. In this game, he was ice cold from the floor, and he got to the free throw line. He made both of his free throws, and then shortly right after that, he made a huge three-pointer, I think, to put us up like 7 or 8 or something. So I think I want Lucas to still try to score, but I think he needs to find it earlier in the game and take shots that are closer to the hoop before shooting a couple from outside the three-point range.
Yeah, and then that's the thing that is tough because, yeah, he makes that three, but that's his only made basket of the whole game.
Yeah.
And it's 1 for 7, you see. 4 of those 7 are all from three. Yeah, he makes the 2 free throws, but it's just like...
We still want more from him.
Yeah, and I think it's just tough because we expect to see kind of a leader in him. And, again, it's right now we just see Tate leading in the scoring, which is totally fine. I don't need you to be a leader on every single part of the game. Mm-hmm. But I think a leader also needs to know when they take the shot, when they don't. And I think that's where that 1 for 7 is, the whole skew of what's going on with your play. Granted, 3 steals is nothing to
No, he was defending really well all game.
And I think you and I will talk about this definitely later in the podcast, but you and I have mentioned to each other, oh, Lucas, we need him to play defense on this guy when we play the next coming game. Mm-hmm. So I think that's where he is going to be key.
Yeah.
So I think we're saving it here for this hot topic later. Yeah. Lucas is my kind of where what happened, what's going on. Paxson played 12 minutes, which is interesting. Tom only played 3, especially Tom only playing 3 with big man Frank being sick.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want to? I kind of want to talk about the big man situation with the rotation.
Yeah, I mean, I think that? I did want to talk about just Cam's game in particular.
Okay.
And specifically, I looked into this career high 37 minutes played. You want to know the only other time he played 36 minutes? Can you any guess in the past 2-3 years? Any other time Cam played 36 minutes?
Any other time Cam or Crut would play 36
There's
minutes?
Only, so this is career high. He played 37 minutes against Norfolk State.
Can I guess?
Yeah.
I'm going to guess Final Four game against Michigan.
I think he's had 34, but the one game he had 36 minutes, surprisingly, was when they beat Florida.
And he played 36 minutes?
Right, because I think it had something to do with Custer being hurt.
Did Custer, I guess Custer might have gone out
so
way early.
So someone just had to, like... take a few of those minutes. But yeah, he played 36 minutes against Florida. I was really surprised to see that.
Wow.
But yeah, so Cam was super reliable in this game. He even missed a couple shots that he usually makes, like little lefty hooks.
Yeah, it's always the hooks that are the rim out or something, yeah.
And he was so... I think he was close to having a really impressive 20-10 rebound game. But still, 14 points, 11 rebounds, 6 assists, very impressive. 37 minutes, Tom only played 3, so... Lou, what are you thinking, like, rotations-wise? Like, what do you think, where do they go from here?
Yeah, I think this is where we talk about how Ahir is playing minutes,
mm-hmm,
and I personally agree with the starting. Okay. I do think you need to start with a true big man. Regardless of him grabbing rebounds as a big man, you need to start with a 4, mm-hmm, and Ahir Ugrok is our 4. Tate is the 3. Lucas is the 2, and then you have Keith as the 1.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a great start, and that now all depends on if you're pushing, if you're up. When you're up by this many points, I think that's when you switch out to go a quick lineup. When you need to defend, you need to have big.
Mm-hmm.
I personally just think we can't have Cameron Crutwig just run around the box, or the post, or even within the box, and think he's going to be able to go up against a healthy prim. Or go, and again, this is just me forecasting for bigger games against Missouri State. Or if he goes up against DeAndre Williams at Evansville, that's when I get worried if we only have one center.
Yeah.
But I did like seeing, when I watched the game, toward the end, is seeing the quick pace of having Noah here, but having Pipkins in.
Yeah.
And seeing a quick step off the ball. You like to see that, because then there's quick passes going in, fluidness, and that's great. And I totally think that's great. But to start a game, I think the lineup still needs to be where it's at. Mm-hmm. And do I think it's better now to have maybe Keith there that he's playing? And again, is maybe they've... We don't know, but we agreed and we've talked about how we think Porter had trained the team to really focus on Keith being the focal point at starter from point guard. What I'd love to see, and me personally, I just love Marquise Kennedy, so I would love to see him control the ball more. But again, is if he's got such depth alone there with Pipkins and himself off the bench, I think that's something that he's going to have to fight for, which I like, quite honestly, to see a fight in the guy. So rotation-wise, I'm just frankly worried about Frank being sick, but again, it seems like just a little cold or something.
Yeah.
Tom Wilson only playing 3 minutes. Nothing serious there. I don't think that really reads into anything. I just think this was a game where we didn't have to worry about big guys, and we were up by so much at a certain point. Let's just push. Tate finding his groove. Rotation-wise, simple this. Start off big. You got to show the four. But depending on how the pedigree of the game goes, if you're up by a lot, or if you're up by a good amount and you want to push the ball, you got to go small with only Cameron. But if you need to defend, you need to keep here in, or at least put Frank in defense. That's something that we always talk about, him being a body on defense.
Yeah, I think my biggest thing, the thing that's the most frustrating for me, is those games where we can't score at the end of the game. And when you have a here in there, you just have a guy who can't score. He is a black hole on offense. It's really a shame to say that he just can't figure out a way to score. And he's not securing offensive rebounds. He's not cutting to the hoop. When he has the ball on the outside of the three-point line, no one's going out there to guard him because he's not going to shoot. So it's just really, I do agree with you. I think Ahir should start because I do think that he is a good defender and he does rebound the ball well. And that's the time when you should start to get Cam going early. So you don't really need Ahir to score at the beginning of the game, hopefully. But with this lineup that they put out at the end of the game against Norfolk State, it was really impressive to see. And Pipkins is a guy who likes to score. That is what he did in junior college. He was the only guy scoring. And so he knows how to find ways to score, and that's exactly what he did in this game against Norfolk State when a lot of other guys couldn't. He was driving to the hoop, fast break opportunities. He would get fouled and get to the free throw line. And I really hope I hope he gets that same opportunity again, because he played it so well against Norfolk State. But was there something else that you wanted to add there?
No, I think just the idea of having the lineup of Cameron Crawford.
Of course.
Tate Hall, Lucas Williamson, Keith Clements, and Jalen Pipkins.
Yeah.
It's totally something nice to see at the end of the stretch. Would I love to see Marquise Kennedy kind of slide in there?
Yeah. I think Marquise should have the opportunity. He just had a very off game.
Mm-hmm. And I think even for me, I think a lovely point, though, him and then, you know, someone I'd love to see added into that, because of what I think could keep up with that fast tempo as a healthy person. There are other players I'd love to see.
Okay.
But I'd love to see Paxson.
Yeah.
Wojcik get in. But do I think he needs to get stronger? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he could become what Tate is doing for us right now if he got a little bit stronger and being able to drive. But I think he'll be able to pick up the pace as well.
Yeah.
So I like seeing guys that we can add another depth to quick pace, but then have also guys with Tom and Frank be the also bench guys that come in for the big. So rotation-wise, I think we both agree. It's just nice to see us scoring at the end of games. And I think that's going to be the definition of how we want to play out the rest of the years. Okay, we might be down, or even if we're up at half, when we just need to know how to respond in the second half.
Yeah, for sure. I think the only thing I want to add about this game is I really do want to talk more about Jalen Pipkins, because I think what he did for this team in this game was so crucial. When we couldn't score, he was looking to score. If at times he was a little fast, a little like wild, it made sense to me for how this game was going. He was creating turnovers. He was defending well. He was getting all up in Norfolk State's face. That was super fun to see, like him kind of jawing back and forth. I don't really know. I mean, Marcus Towns did it a little bit, but I can't really think of, like, another guy. Maybe Dante did it a little bit, too. I can't really think of another guy who was always up in, like, other people's faces. It's fun to see a guy, like, play with attitude and play with, like, play with that, like, fire. It's, and he can really get up. He's athletic. He had a really fun dunk at the end of the game where he cut back door. Cam fed him perfectly, and he slammed it home. I mean, he's going high up off the glass on layups. He hit two threes. He is a really good scorer, and I think he needs to keep looking for opportunity to score. But he just needs to dial it back sometimes. But if he's open and he's in rhythm, I think he should really look to score. I really, really liked what I saw from Jalen Pipkins in this game. And I think he'll continue to get opportunities just with like how the lineups are going so far. No one's really asserted themselves as the first guy off the bench, like a sixth man. We've seen Marquise Kennedy do it, and I think he'll continue to get that opportunity too. But I think you'd agree, I don't think that guy is Paxson Wojcik. I don't think Paxson is the sixth man. And Tom is not the sixth man. Frank is going to get his minutes, but I don't think he'll ever play enough to be that sixth man, at least while Cam's here. And so I think those are the guys, and I would love to see both Jalen Pipkins and Marquise Kennedy get a significant amount of minutes to be the sixth man or the seventh man. But overall, I mean, this game, although it started off pretty rough, it ended very well. We saw good things from Cam and Tate, especially Jalen Pipkins, and Keith Clemens was pretty much like a very steady force throughout the game. He got a few steals. He led the offense pretty well. Although there is one thing, they still are looking to the bench for a play every time they go down the court. And there were a couple times where I don't know what Porter was doing, but he wasn't relaying them a play. And by the time they got a play, there was 15 seconds left and they couldn't run it. So they need to figure that out. Either Keith needs to just take control and call a play, or Porter needs to call it faster. Something, because they cannot have that happening anymore. A win is a win, and a 19-point win is even better. Our Ramblers moved to 7-4, beating Norfolk State, and they do play again on Wednesday against Vanderbilt, which we'll talk about here in a minute. Lou, what are your last thoughts on this game?
I think this game kind of has a glimpse into maybe what we'll see with rotation-wise. And I think that's just what's going to be a pattern for success in the Valley. I think there are definitely going to be games where guys are going to be hot and cold and seeing who fits well with where and kind of just understanding who's here to play for us this year. I'm not saying everyone's zoned out or anything, but we've pretty much nearly played halfway through our season of non-conference, and that's unofficially halfway, but it's a halfway point of value of games because you play the same guys twice in the second half, so it's just going to be interesting. I think these next two games, which we'll talk about, are as valued as anything.
Yep.
Because it will really show us these are high-value teams. There's not going to be like easy Quincy games, quite honestly with you. So I think these games are going to show you how we play in the Valley and who we're playing with.
Definitely. That'll do it for the recap of Norfolk State, but stick with us and we'll have more.
Go to Lady Blurs game on Friday.
Yeah, go to Lady Blurs game on Friday, and go Blurs in general.
Oh my gosh.
Woo! Okay, that's hot, but I want another bite.
Woo! My mouth's burning, listeners. Okay. I love talking Loyola Rambler basketball.
So in addition to things happening to our Ramblers, there's always things happening around the Missouri Valley Conference. This past week, there was a very impressive win. Northern Iowa went into Boulder and beat Colorado. At the time, Colorado was ranked, I think, 24th or 23rd.
24th, I think, yeah.
So it was a very impressive win for the Panthers. And the Valley as a whole. And after that game, I think that Northern Iowa is definitely the team to beat in the Valley.
They received votes today.
What's their record now? 9-1 or 8-1 or something like that. But A.J. Green is as good as ever for that team. They have a bunch of shooters in Spencer Haldeman and Their big guy, Austin Fife, has been very good for them. And then also, I think one of the players, I think he was a player of the week, Trey Burhau, the other, like a few weeks ago, was player of the week for them. But they, yeah, they're a very impressive team. They're very top-heavy. Their rotation is very much focused around their starters. They really only have a rotation of, like, six guys, with a few other guys playing a few minutes. But then they also went and beat Grand Canyon University on the road, which, if you've never seen any highlights from a Grand Canyon game, it's one of the most intense places to play in all of college basketball. I think
Coach K even said it. He was so surprised by how loud it gets there. Yeah, no, they've really turned around that arena and the momentum of how they really support a team.
Yeah, so not necessarily the best team in Grand Canyon, but still an impressive road win. So Northern Iowa is really turning on the Jets at the right time, and they are looking very, very good. They are 10-1, and they have just one more game. They have a home game against Marshall right before Christmas. So I would assume that they're going to be heavily favored in that game and move to 11-1 going into conference play. And I wouldn't be surprised if they receive more votes and even might squeak their way into the top 25 going into the conference season. And if they don't before the conference season, they have a pretty easy slate the first three games. They play at Illinois State, which is not all that difficult. They play at home against Bradley. Bradley's a good team, but we'll talk about this too. They just lost Elijah Childs, one of their best, I think their leading scorer.
Leading scorer, yeah.
And then they play at home against Indiana State. So if they win their next four games, they probably will be ranked, which they will definitely be favored in all four of those games. So Northern Iowa is really, really the team to beat. Lou, have you been impressed with Northern Iowa?
Yeah, I think this is just shows you not only the team, but what you get when you have a top 100 recruit in A.J. Green. For those of you who don't know, A.J. Green is their starting point guard. He was freshman of the year last year. Mm-hmm. Out of the Valley, but he actually 2 years ago was a top 100 recruit by ESPN, by many in the country for high school college basketball recruits. Wondering why you and I got him. Not saying you and I doesn't deserve him, but you and I also has AJ Green's lovely father as their assistant coach, so kind of felt like a reason to go home. So that's kind of cool to have, but I think he is really taking the next level with from freshman of the year to leading this team. But again, as you and I, is always a team that grinds, and they always play tough. As last year, those of you remember, we had to have our beautiful big man make a three against them to beat them last year. They're a team that never backs down from a fight, and I think this win against over Colorado really shows you how high level they are pushing this year. And I totally agree, if they keep on winning, if they finish out their non-conference undefeated.
Well, they have one loss. They have one loss.
Sorry, finish out their win out their last few games, that's the better way. Win out. I usually see them being ranked, depending on, especially, like, guys, UNC's losing. They're not even ranked anymore. So the top 25 kind of seems like it's there for anyone to grab.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I is the team who's there to grab it. Because as people remember, they made a little bit NCAA tournament run a few years ago. So they're always up there, and I always think they're not so an easy Valley team to beat. And the way I'll end it with that is we played them first day about 2 years ago in the March Madness, and we nearly lost them, and that was the year we went to the Final Four.
Yeah. No, they're a good team. They will be, as of right now, they are the team to beat. Another team that was projected to be in the top, actually was projected to finish first, is Missouri State. Missouri State at the current moment is 6-6. They just lost a game to VCU, which VCU is a good team. But to this point, very few good wins for them. They only beat St. Joseph's by 2, which we beat them by a bunch. I think their best win at this point would be against Murray State at home, which Murray State's a respectable team. But they've also had some rough losses, including a loss to Little Rock. And then, like I mentioned before, they lost to Buffalo, and then just recently lost to VCU. So a little bit of a surprise, I think. I didn't expect them to be undefeated, but I thought they would have maybe pulled off one or two more victories, especially that home opener against Little Rock. But they're struggling. They're struggling. Some of their the guys that they thought were going to be very good and make steps forward. Like Tulio Da Silva has not been all that great. Additionally, you have guys like Keandre Cook, who they are doing well, but Lamont West, and they're just, really
yeah. I totally agree, and I think that's why we are so surprised, because they stacked so much of potential.
Yeah.
And so many players. Silva, I think we kind of talked about this, and we're not hampering, and we're not causing it the Clayton effect or the Custer effect or anything, but we kind of see a high junior year, great junior year, and then a dip right now in a senior year. Mm-hmm. Keandre Cook, we kind of saw him. I personally saw him. I do remember this. As a third team possibility for the Valley, you did bring up great points about maybe he being quiet with Lamont West and with Everett and Prim out there. But we're seeing right now the whole kind of squad being quiet. Prim was the leader of that team scoring from off the bench, and now he's injured. So This is where we hopefully – we just want to see if this is a strong team to play. And I think this is just an interesting way to see how Dana Ford kind of handles it. But that's how they're shaping up right now, is more of a question mark for me.
Yeah.
They are a team that on paper is like, hey, you guys could do it. And then it's like you end up not doing it. So it's – and it's – granted, they haven't beaten Kentucky this year or anything.
No.
So, but they are a team that they should have been able to pull off a few of their wins that have been a little bit more questionable than anything.
Yeah, the next team I want to talk about here is Bradley. Currently, Bradley's 8-3. They've had a couple good games, beaten some teams they should beat. But the biggest news for them is that they just lost Elijah Childs to a hand injury for anywhere from 3 to 6 weeks. They currently have a really impressive win against Kansas State in their tournament. They've also beaten teams like IUPUI and UIC. Other than that Kansas State win, no real statement win. I don't think they've even won a game on the road yet besides that tournament game. They do have two more non-conference games at Miami, Ohio, and then at home against Toledo, which it would be nice to see them get a road win and then finish strong against Toledo. But I really don't know what to expect now from them. I think they're going to need to get a lot from their point guard and Darrell Brown and get some help off the bench from – they have a couple of younger guys that have been impressive in spurts. But they're really going to need them to come in very clutch for them here down the stretch. And then also leading into the beginning of Missouri Valley Conference play. So I think that this Bradley team, it might struggle a bit for the next few weeks. And then just depending on the health of Elijah Childs, might do well down the stretch. But I really don't know anymore, you know. Lou, is that sound about right? You think they're going to struggle for a little bit?
Yeah, I think Bradley, let's be honest, Bradley in the NCAA tournament game was Elijah Childs or Brown.
Yeah.
So we only have Childs. Childs is now out for quite some time. And Brown, I think, really plays well off of having Childs, because Childs is the big guy. Childs, 6'7" guy on the court. Missing that piece, who's a high scorer, high offense and high just IQ player is something I think that's going to be crucial for them. And again, as though Bradley kind of finds ways to scrape and kind of scrap their way along and fight back, but I do see this as a major blow to their team.
Definitely. I think there's a couple more teams we could go in depth about, but I think the only other team I really want to spend a little bit of time on is Evansville, who have been ridiculously up and down this season. Obviously, the big thing is beating Kentucky at home, at Kentucky's place, which happened earlier in the season. But they've also had a couple good wins, and they beat Ball State, and then they beat Morgan State in triple overtime. They beat IUPUI. But then they've had some really, like, head-scratchers. They lost to East Carolina at home. They lost to George Washington at home. They just today lost to Jacksonville State, which is one of the worst teams in Division I college basketball.
They lost by 26 points, for those who would like to know.
Yeah, so just really, really up and down. And honestly, the past, you know, this game is not very good, but they, ever since winning in their tournament against Morgan State and then beating IUPUI, they've won a few games, but they've really struggled against some teams that they shouldn't have. So I don't really know what to expect from them. I think that they could do well come Valley time, but I honestly, until they show me otherwise, I'm not going to be all too worried. Although DeAndre Williams is at least a top three player in the Missouri Valley Conference right now. I mean, it's him and probably AJ Green and Cameron Crotwig, honestly. I mean, Freeman Liberty is very good, but the rest of his team is not very good. So, but I think other than that, Drake, I'm not too worried about them. Southern Illinois is really struggling this year, as well as Illinois State's really struggling. And then Valpo really struggling. They've lost a couple guys to injury. So I think right now it's Northern Iowa at the top. A lot of confusion in the middle with Missouri State and Bradley and Evansville and us. One of the things I wanted to talk about is how I think we're being forgotten a little bit. And I actually really like that. I like that no one's really talking about us.
The bar's not set too high.
No one is predicting us to win. No one's predicting us to be second or third even. I don't think. I haven't seen it. And maybe we can kind of just fly under the radar and surprise some people. And, you know, who knows if we win. But even a top three finish, I think, would be a pretty good season for us from here on out.
Yeah, I do agree with that. That's pretty cool. My only take on that, and it's not like a total switch take, I would just like to see a big push toward the end of the season, going on a big winning streak, because that would just hopefully set up our, if this is just potential, if we win the Arch Madness to get a good seed. But again, as the way the season starts and the way it's at right now, I do agree a top three finish. Anything but a Thursday game right now, I think. We don't want a Thursday game. I think having that day off is huge for us.
And so avoiding a Thursday game is finishing top six in the Valley? Yeah.
So top six, yeah, is great to avoid a Thursday game, even though I think it would be nice maybe to get a top three finisher. And again,
I think it's very possible.
Yeah, the way things are focusing out now, it's sadly sad to see some injuries, but there's a few things right now.
I think we're trending in the right direction. But I think these next two games are going to be very important, which is a segue into talking about this Vanderbilt game. So coming up on Wednesday, we play a neutral game. We're actually in the Basketball Hall of Fame Holiday Showcase, which I know there's another game. I'm not too sure who the other game is. But we're going to be playing out in Phoenix. The game is at 5:30, and we're going against Vanderbilt, who at this time is 6-3. They're coming off a loss to Liberty. Liberty's actually an undefeated team right now. And recently they had wins against Buffalo, and then before that lost a game to Tulsa. So a very beatable team. They are a member of the SEC, which is a very, one of the Power Five conferences in college basketball. So it would be a very impressive win. Although I've looked at some stats, and we are favored to win this game, just based off of like conferences and politics in college basketball, I don't think anyone's really expecting us to win this game. Vanderbilt's a very similar level team to us. A lot of the rankings have them near 100 or 120, and that's right where Loyola is as well. We're right in the like 110 range. So I think it's going to be a pretty good battle. Vanderbilt is led by a forward who's scoring 22 points a game, and it's Aaron Nesmith. 6'6" forward, scoring 22 points a game, 5 rebounds, and that is the guy we definitely need to focus on. Hopefully someone like Uguak or Tate Hall can slow him down to some extent, but someone who's scoring 22 points a game is going to get his. He's going to find a way to get his own baskets. He's also shooting 48% from three, so we need to watch out for that. And then other than that, they really just have two other guys that score over 10 points a game. Two guards. Last name Lee, is scoring 17 points a game. And then Pippen Jr. is scoring 10 points a game. So, Lou, what are you excited about this game? How are you feeling about the Vanderbilt game?
Yeah, so Vanderbilt's a team that's kind of coming off of a down in the past few years, especially with, funny enough, a coach being fired that is kind of close to the Valley. But also, they have guys, they've gotten top recruits, and that's what they get. They're an SEC team, they're a team that plays big. They've been in the tournament before, they're not joking around. That's why I do think this is a big game. Regardless of us being favored, I kind of want to stay in that momentum of us not being favored. They're a bigger school, bigger name. This is a bigger stage, too. This isn't just Gentile Arena. This is a big kind of time for us to just be on TV and show off our name and show off our skills again. And I think that's huge for the program. And I think that's where you need to take this momentum of a four-game winning streak and apply it. I don't think an SEC team, regardless of where they're at in the SEC, is someone to joke with. Mm-hmm. And also, I think this will hopefully allow us to add a credible game to the schedule. Like, these are games where it's like, hey, this is a big game. We gotta take advantage of it. Because we have the Quincy game. We took full advantage of that. Let's start taking advantage of games that are not losing to Coppin State. That's where I'm at. I know this is a big game. I'm not expecting a blowout win by us. I'm hopefully not expecting a blowout loss. No. But I'm expecting it to be tough, but nothing of a joke to be like, oh, this is just a game we have on our schedule.
No, I think it'll be a close game. I think either way, I don't think either team's going to blow one out of the water. One thing that I've noticed, Vanderbilt is scoring nearly 80 points a game, but they're letting up 70 points a game. So hopefully we can figure out a way to score points and also, we know our defense is pretty good. So they are coming off a game where they only scored 56 points. So, you know, it is possible to keep this team down, and hopefully we can figure out a way to defend them. Hopefully we took some notes from that game and implement a lot of those into our game plan. And then after that, we have a home game against Davidson coming up on this Sunday, which is another big game against a team that is always very good.
Always good.
And it would be a icing on the cake in order if we could win both those games going into our conference schedule.
Yeah, no, I think Davidson's always a team that they always are there to play. They're always a big push in the A-10. They're always there to never back down from a competition. They're always within the top 25. And this game just adds to our kind of profile of like, hey, we're here to play, but also a closeout. Somewhat of a little disappointment in the non-conference, mm-hmm. and I think this would give us a high note. And also, this is the exact push you need before Christmas break, because again, it's not as big of a break, but it's a few days, so you do get that few days of not practicing all the time, but then back in a conference play. So I think this is the momentum we need as a team to be like, hey, because if we win the final two games, that's a 6-game winning streak.
Yeah.
That's what you would like to do, so I'd like to see that and kind of kickstart that trend.
Definitely. Looking forward to both those games, and we'll have coverage for you coming up after that. Actually, it's going to be kind of a fun episode next week. I have two special guests going to be on the podcast. It'll be me and those two special guests, so I will leave that for a surprise. But, I'm really looking forward to these next two games and whatever the season has to hold for our Ramblers. Because at this point, it could go either way. We don't really know. But,
We'd tell you.
Yes. If I could predict the future, I would have already told you. I think that's going to do it here for from both of us at Podcast 63. Thank you all for listening. And don't forget, go Blurs.